Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Independent Senator Lynn Ruane was elected last month for a third term in the Senate. Congratulations,
Lynn. Thank you.
She is a mother of two, an award-winning author, and is now a filmmaker. Where does she get the time to do everything? Ready or Not is the name of the film. It's a coming-of-age drama about teenage relationships. It's set in Dublin in 1998, and it's been screened as part of the Dublin International Film Festival. And Lynn Ruane joins us in the studio. Welcome, Lynn. Are you
in good form? I am in good form, very good form.
Excellent. Are you shannading this week?
I am shannading, trying to. We started back last week for the election of Cathaoirleach, so we'll have the election of Las Cathaoirleach then this week, and then should be kind of full swing again then.
And in between, you're releasing a film.
Yes.
So where do you get the time to do all of this?
Well, I think writing is something that I enjoy. Yeah. So it feels more like an additional thing, like something that is a hobby. I think if I was to be a full-time artist and has a different energy then trying to write, where for me, I'm lucky and privileged enough that writing is me having luxury or spare time to do something that I enjoy. And then,
But it is a career, because the whole idea of the Shannad is to have people out in the real world, because it's not a full time political job. Isn't that the idea?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think that's probably historically maybe how some senators treated the Shannad.
Right.
So I wouldn't want to give that false perception. I mean, I definitely work full time politically. I'm in the chamber three times a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But outside of that, I would very much be working in the prisons, in the community sector, definitely all feeding, following, like not like as part of my Shannad role, not extra work.
Yes.
But I would work full time, I suppose, on the issues that I champion and work on within the Shannad.
It brings you inside and outside the chambers,
yes,
say.
Yes.
So, I know, it's quite a hobby to do the writing, because this is it's a career for many people to get a film made. Very difficult to get
it. It is very difficult, and I think I'm extremely lucky, and I do wonder if, you know, if the things that I write would have got noticed, I suppose, without having the other career that I had. So I do think it has helped that I've had a platform, because then I get to talk and introduce the people, I suppose, in the film industry that have also wanted to work with me because they've read my writing. But not everyone would necessarily get that type of access if they were only writing and trying to break into an industry.
Right. And you have a history here. You have a grow for writing all your life.
I've been writing since I was a child. Yeah.
And there was a short film which was made by the same director.
Yes, Waiting Day. It kind of captures the snapshot in time of women, I suppose, waiting to be paid, waiting under social welfare, and the struggles that come along with that, but also how resourceful and loving and caring people are towards, I suppose, each other and their loved ones during times of struggle.
And that's how you got to know Claire Frances Byrne, was it? Who's
I had met her previously on another thing that she was working on at the time, and she had read some of my writing in the past, and I think she enjoyed how I wrote, and she wanted to maybe work with me and for me to write something specifically for her and her feature debut, which is an honour, I suppose, that somebody with her talent would want to use my writing to also showcase her own talent in such a big way.
That's a fantastic achievement from the short film to the full feature. And in the short, your daughter was in the lead role.
Yes, which is beautiful, because I was a young mother and she plays a young mother in it, so it's a little bit of an emotional watch. You know, the characters are not are fictional, but they're very much based on, you know, realism, like social issues, and very believable characters. So to see her play a role that I suppose I can identify with in some ways was an honour, and she's such a special actor, so I think I was just honoured she'd actually work with me and trust me, because she's the real artist in the house.
How so? Explain to us, because she's doing quite a lot, isn't she?
Yeah, she's been acting since she's 12. I mean, she acted first in Frank Berry's I Used to Live Here, which was shot in Tallaght, about cluster suicides, and she's just been doing amazing ever since. And yeah, she's very talented.
And has she gone into Trinity to do?
She did film and English in Trinity. She graduated a couple of years ago. She's 24 now.
So you're both Trinity guys.
Yeah, she actually nominated me. She was one of my nominators, which was a really special moment. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Considering I hadn't finished school, you know, to have for her to go full circle like that was really nice.
Oh, it's quite a family affair. Then.
Yes.
And there's a little nod to her in the film?
In the...
Ready or Not.
Well, she narrates. She narrates it, yeah. Yes.
She's not on screen, but she's there.
So
it comes around full circle, the whole connection. The part of the writing, you actually did a course as well.
Yeah, I did a creative writing master's in DCU, and I hadn't expected to like screenwriting so much. It was a module on the course. I hadn't gone specifically to do that mode of writing. But what I enjoyed about it was it very much I could write in my own dialect. So when I write for national media or if I'm writing for policy and that, like, it's all different dense types of text.
I see.
And you're having to bring it up to, I suppose, what society is telling you is, like, you know, Harvard English or something. And when I was writing dialogue, I was like, I get to be more authentic, I suppose, to my voice and my dialect. And I really like the flow of screenwriting. So I just kind of dived into it.
It's funny, isn't it? Put your head in the legislative language.
Yes.
It kind of changes your brain.
It does. And it's a bit tiring, you know, because it's a whole different language, you know. So being able to write scripts felt I could tell stories in a way that felt the most real to me, because I didn't have to change pronunciation and I could use the turn of phrase that we would use in working class communities.
Good to be able to have that turn of phrase for dialogue.
Yes.
Writing it for screen in particular. Tell us what the film is about.
Yeah, so it's about growing up in the 90s. It's set in the 90s, but it's not about the 90s. It's in a working class community,
yeah,
but it's not necessarily about class, you know. So I wanted to showcase, first of all the amazing young people across Dublin specifically that wouldn't ordinarily maybe get access to being on front of a camera. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them are on camera for the first time. The backdrop is consent. So it's coming of age in a time where you're at that age where you're kind of, everyone's feeling around in the dark, just kind of bits of pressure on you. You know, you're maybe kissing people for the first time, sex is getting spoke about for the first time, and everyone is probably pretending that they know a little bit more than everyone else, and no one's really discussing the topic. So sexual consent is the backdrop, but it's very much many things. It's also just about friendship and love and growing up and all the confusion that brings.
It's kind of the messy atmosphere of being teenagers.
Yes.
And all been thrown in together with no information really or understanding what they're doing, what they're,
exactly,
where the boundaries are.
Exactly.
And it's very subtly done. This can sometimes sound like, you know, coming of age, teenage relationships can sound a bit grim and depressing, but actually they're having quite a lot of fun in their lives anyway.
They are. And I mean, laughter is a big part of it. Love is a big part of it. And I think sometimes as a young person, unknowingly, you can cross boundaries that nobody has ever told you where those boundaries are, where they lie. You know, young men and women, and young men especially, will I suppose, later on have to answer potentially for boundaries that they crossed, but nobody ever really spoke about positive sexual relationships with young men. So I wanted to subtly tell the story without any real villain and without any real resolution. You know, people think that there has to be some sort of resolution where if somebody has crossed a line, especially in relation to consent, when nobody actually understood what it was, and then there's some big court case and there's some big, you know,
a handy final judgment.
Yeah, I didn't want that, because
in real
things
life
it doesn't happen and things are messy, and sometimes things will happen and then you all still remain in the same space together, in the same community or in the same house. And I just wanted to capture the reality of that in a very subtle way.
So it's kind of like things happen to a group, and maybe individually you know what's happening, but collectively they're naive, aren't they?
Oh, completely naive.
And you don't realise what's happened until you reach the age.
And there's
of
a huge amount of socialisation that has happened, not only to the young people themselves, but also to their parents and the parents before them. So sometimes you can't even identify where your belief system has came from, or why you feel like you need to pursue a young girl, so like convince them to be with you. Do you know what I mean? Like, and because you actually don't know where that, you've no way to actually have dialogue about that and understand that. So everybody is just doing what they think is expected of them, or what they think their peers are doing, without actually having any conversation. And I wanted to set it in that age group, because I think sometimes if you set that conversation in even young adulthood, people will kind of say, oh well, you're old enough now and take responsibility for your actions. And it's kind of like, well, you know, we learn these behaviours.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe to have that conversation at a slightly younger age in the film will allow less judgment and will allow people think about it a little bit more.
Okay, what I want to do is play a scene to give people,
yes,
a flavour of it. It's a short little piece, but it gives us that kind of idea of lines being crossed even if they don't seem to know what's going on. And also this is using the language of youth, which is why it's close to reality, and the kind of the awkwardness and discomfort and some of the words that they use towards each other.
I'm not a fridgey. Why does all keep saying that?
Even I'm not a fridgey. Even Sarah's not a fridgey.
Everyone has.
Really though?
Yeah. Listen, Katie's there for the take.
Katie's my friend.
I know since we're kids. Friend? Why, are you a little girl or something?
Now, that word, a lot of women and girls, I think, will identify, won't they, yes, with the word frigid.
Yeah, like language has probably morphed and changed over the years. I mean, young people now might say, and I probably sound like a Facebook ma to the young people in the film, but like they might say, are you active or you're not active? You know, all these things.
Is that the words?
Well, yeah, okay. Well, that has a kind of connotation for many different things, but having sex is definitely probably included in that. Mm. But yeah, like a frigid was kind of proposed to you like it was a really, really bad thing. So you should not be that. But then if you decided, right, you weren't going to be that, if you were the opposite, you were potentially, you know, called other terms. I don't know whether RT allow the language, but the S word or, you know, stuff like that. So you were kind of...
Being easy would have been a kind
exactly.
of a term.
Exactly. So it's a really binary understanding. You're either that or you're that. You know what I mean?
And both of them are shaming.
Exactly. And the last line there where it says, what, you a little girl or something. So even that young bias that it wasn't natural to them to be really trying it on with girls, they would also then come under this other pressure that there was something about their masculinity that yes. was in threat okay. if they didn't also act on this thing of chasing girls. So then bias would make decisions based on this idea of not wanting to be targeted as being soft or, you know, so I wanted to try and capture all those little subtleties and what's happening in people's relationships.
This is the decision you made not to villainise the
yes.
boys.
Oh, 100%. I think we can't have conversations if we're going to villainise everybody, and I want everyone to be comfortable to have the conversation, you know. And I think the fact that we're doing it in the way with young people and we're setting it in the 90s as well, so far enough away from people that they might feel more okay with talking about it.
Yeah.
And I'm just hoping that not only the discussions, but behind that discussion, there's also the kind of way in which we made the movie. So we wanted to make sure that everyone was authentic to the world. So, you know, we cast out on the streets,
yeah.
with youth workers.
Did you actually cast?
Thankfully with Ru Cody and with Claire Francis Bourne, when we began to work together, I think we found that we shared many, many values. So when I had the kind of idea that I didn't want, you know, to just go straight to big names that would kind of pull interest. So like Fair Play to Screen Ireland and Article One and stuff that supported us because we weren't attaching anyone to it, mm-hmm. because I wanted them to go out and they wanted to go out onto the streets. So Maureen Hughes and her colleagues.
She's a legendary casting director. Yeah.
So they were on the streets of Cushlawn and Talla and Jobstown and Cherry Orchard in the youth clubs, in the youth reaches, in Bluebell. Bluebell was amazing. I mean, they allowed us to use the school there. We were using their community development projects. It really was like me taking my community development hat and just implanting it onto Phil. I'm making. So okay. It was a really, really amazing relationship, and hundreds of kids that have never acted before showed up
because you found there was the
audition.
Appetite.
And you're naming it. You're saying this is for you. This is not you trying to break into another world.
Right.
This is your world, and this is for you. And we're looking for authentic working class dialect and authentic working class people. And once you carve out that and say this is what it is, the talent is all there, you know.
And it's just pure authenticity then after that.
Yes.
It sounds like you're frustrated having watched things that maybe don't have that level of...
Yeah, like I know. It's like, I mean, often people tell working class stories, but they've never lived in the working class world. So I find that hard because I think we should be able to tell our own histories. And I think where our communities are full of talent and writers and filmmakers and photographers and everything. I mean, it's no different to other communities. What's different is the access and who you know. And for me, I wanted to challenge that. I wanted people to see that the talent is there if you go looking for it, and that we can tell our own stories, and we've plenty of stories to tell. And, you know, I can even see if there is a working class kind of character within something, you can see how they might phrase a sentence. And I'd be sitting at home going, nah, like we wouldn't say that, or that's not how we'd say that word, or so it there's loads of telltale things in it. But I do remember Frank Berry coming into And when he cast Jordan in I Used to Live Here, he spent...
That's your daughter, Jordan,
yes,
who we forgot to mention
her name. He spent a while, integrating himself into Kilnardin Community Centre, where lots of suicides had happened all around that. And he integrated himself there before he cast there. So it is possible. And that's what we wanted for this film too, was to showcase that there's a huge level of diversity and talent in this country if you actually create the space.
And Michael Inside is another one.
And Michael Inside, which is from Frank Berry as well. Yeah.
It's a prison drama, which is very, very good. So that kind of frustration. Do you watch a lot of film and TV yourself?
I do. I'm not great. I read a lot. I mean, yeah. I do watch film, but I'm not as good at, you know, I wouldn't be good at analysing films. I know what I like and I know what I don't like. You know, it's more of a feeling I have towards something than an analysis of it.
Okay.
But I read a lot. I mean, I read a lot of philosophy, and I read a little bit of fiction, but I read a lot of philosophy. So
do you?
I think a lot
that
of
that sounds
my,
heavy.
Well, I majored in philosophy in college.
Easy for you?
Yes. Yeah, so well, not easy, but I read a lot of philosophy, and I just think that philosophy allows you to think well. And I think if you can think deeply into ideas, you can then take those ideas onto screen in a different way. Like I think philosophy allows me to have a wide range and I suppose collection of ideas about the world, and I think it helps actually with the screenwriting.
Are there any philosophy, any accessible recommendations?
Well, yeah, at the minute I'm reading, and I'm going to probably butcher his name in French, Edouard Louis, and The History of Violence, and he writes about working class experiences, and he's a young guy, he's a French guy, he'd probably say he's a sociologist, I would definitely say a philosopher. And I read a lot of black.
He's a young guy. I grew up in Terrible Poverty.
Yes.
And he's a hugely celebrated author in France. Now.
Yeah, he's really, really good. And then I read a lot of American, South American, kind of the rise of the political movements over there. And
really?
Yeah. And lots of great writers. I mean, I read all of Maya Angelou's books last year, and I'd read a lot of Angela Davis and then older philosophers, like, you know, but like I love all the old Socratic dialogues and stuff. So, yeah.
Before we lose you. I should say, by the way, when you're talking about, you know, casting working class people in a working class drama, it's not about blocking the pitch from anyone else doing it. It's about opening it up, isn't it?
Oh, it's about opening
it up.
Sometimes
it's misconstrued.
Oh, 100%. I think actors obviously can play whatever. That's not an argument that I'm like wanting to have. I'm just wanting to show that the field is much, much bigger. And I think people often just don't have connections to the communities that they would like to cast. So there's no bridge. You know what I mean? So it's not that I think that cast and directors are just saying, oh, well, we don't want to cast young working class people. It's that sometimes they don't know how to enter those worlds and those spaces. So we just need to blow them open every now and again so that we see, like, I love hearing my accent on the telly, and it's very rare that I get it, but I absolutely love it. And I know that other people.
Do you still think it's rare?
It is rare. Yeah.
In terms of drama or in terms of?
Everything. Everything. Yeah. Yeah.
I was looking, it's 10 years since you were elected president of Trinity College's Student Union. That's been some decade.
I know, it's hard to believe it's a decade. I turned 40 at the end of last year, and I'm actually quite excited, actually.
You don't look anywhere near 40.
Do I not? Thank you. Yeah, no, it's been 10 years, and it's been an incredible 10 years, and I've grown a lot and learned a lot and feel very excited, I suppose, about what the next 10 years look like too.
Do you think you can make an impact as an independent senator?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've passed legislation. I'm responsible for the NDA legislation that bans NDAs in relation to sexual abuse, harassment. I've also, I think, in relation to drugs policy, I think the conversation that has continued has been a daily fight for me and will continue to be. So I do think if you do politics in a particular way that you can make changes, and I hope I can continue to do that. I also do a lot of work in the prisons, a lot of artistic work as well, and I would cast most of them men in that prison tomorrow in any film. They were amazing. Myself and Grace Dyes did Theatre of the Oppressed in Mountjoy Prison for a year, and then we brought in 150 state actors and bodies, from ministers to Tusla to all the heads of state, to have to sit and watch the Theatre of the Oppressed that the men wrote, and it was unreal. But lots of great actors there too. You know,
and in terms of that, because of your legislation, some of the early stuff you did was try to decriminalise drugs for a small possession.
Yes.
That's now made its way into the programme for government, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's mainstream now. It wasn't when I first started. It was one of my first pieces of legislation, and I've continued to lobby constantly in the background. I've continued to travel the world in terms of making those global connections. I mean, the conversations at a UN level are very much around that prohibition has failed. So yeah, I've continued to kind of grow that base And
is it a minus that they've dropped the term decriminalising from, which was in Fianna Fáil's promise, and now the programme of government is about making it a health issue? Is that?
Well, I think if they understand what a health issue is, it's not allowing them to diverge from health issue. Mm. If it's a health issue, well, then justice is never involved, and that means it's not an adult caution scheme. So they'll try and currently say that what they've introduced over the last couple of years around an adult caution scheme is health led. It's not health led. So for me, it's about language, and I think holding I suppose politicians and policy makers to account on language will be very important, because they can't change the meaning of health led no matter how hard they try, I suppose, and that's my next endeavour, to not allow them to.
And we should say, just to give the objectivity, the programme government, it is about saying that a possession case would be diverted to the health service. So,
and that's not health led.
It's further.
Yeah, because then police, who's diverting?
Just giving the government line. Thanks, Lynn, for making it so easy for me. There's some lovely messages coming to you on the film. Great to hear Lynn, a very open, honest and progressive legislator, I think. So I mean, delighted she's back representing us all, particularly those whose voice is rarely heard. And that's from Eric. Love Lynn. Waiting Days, a brilliant short film. Jordan is another amazing talent. That's the daughter. Continued success to them both. We'll be looking forward to seeing the new film. That's from George McMahon in Betty's Town. And people can see the new film because it's on this Saturday in the Lighthouse Cinema. Ready or Not is the name of the film. And you're going to be doing a Q&A, or who's doing the Q&A afterwards?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but someone will be. I might be. Who knows?
DIFF as in DIFF. That's the filmfestival.ie is the best place to get that. Lynn Horan, thank you so much for coming in.
Good luck. You.